is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, everybody, and welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Happy Friday. Tom is out today. He'll be back Monday. And in the meantime, I am here with Shano, guest hosting today, filling in. It is Friday. It is Anything Goes. So you are welcome to call in 202-536-3270. And we will have Hal Sparks, the one and only Renaissance man, in just a moment.
Anything Goes Mega Worldwide is going to be coming up.
Yes. Perhaps he's having some internet issues.
Yeah.
You know, it was announced today that Comcast got a little bit of bad news. Maybe they're pouting.
Right. The merger did not go through.
Yes.
And they decided to pull it.
Yes. They decided to pull the $45 billion bid for Time Warner Cable, which would have given them control of 57% of the nation's broadband and just about 30% control over all of the nation's television service.
Which we should celebrate. But as I was saying earlier, we are celebrating having two big cruddy companies instead of one big, giant, very cruddy company.
Yeah.
That's essentially what we're, you know, it's just not as bad. Anyone who's dealt with either of those companies, we had to deal with one today.
Yes, it was amazing.
Or not. They never made it.
My theory is that the regulators, mm-hmm. the FCC, may have been subject to Comcast's awesome customer service.
Yeah.
It's quite possible that might have swayed their decision.
Well, one of them was supposed to be here in between 8 and 12 today.
Crickets. Yes. So lots of stuff in the news. That going on. Loretta Lynch was confirmed. Lots of big corporate power stories that are always one of our favorites to cover.
I find the interesting part of the Loretta Lynch confirmation, now that it's, you know, the 6 month of nonsense is over with, is how Ted Cruz, someone who wants to lead our nation, running for president, went on the floor of the Senate and bellowed and, you know, and talked about how unlawful and unlawful and unlawful. And then when it came down to making a decision and casting a vote in doing his job, Ted Cruz was nowhere to be found. Actually, he was somewhere to be found. He's at a fundraiser. He didn't act while he vehemently was against Loretta Lynch's nomination and talked about it incessantly and in a very nasty way. When it came down to actually voting, he had to go raise money instead.
Yes. Cruz just cruised on out of town to get to Texas for a fundraiser, a $2,700 a plate fundraiser for all those who like to complain about the other side getting corporate cash. And it wasn't the first time that he ditched out on an important vote to go and pick up money.
Mm-hmm.
From the wealthy supporters. He also skipped out on the vote approving the anti-human trafficking legislation that Republicans got that, abortion mm-hmm. amendment in because Democrats caved, as usual.
Hmm.
So I think that it's very interesting that Ted Cruz, not in CASA when it comes time to actually legislating, yet he wants more power.
Sure. So when it comes to making key executive decisions as president of the United States, will he just talk about it and then leave before making the decision? That's the question.
I don't know, but apparently.
And I'm going through the right-wing website saying that he's on the rise in the polls, but I haven't heard a blip out of him other than, you know, him fighting back and forth with Lindsey Graham, I think, and John McCain,
It doesn't seem like they are big fans. Any news from Mr. Hal Sparks?
Let me check.
All right. In the meantime, I do want to tell you guys about an amazing story over at Talking Points Memo about the Republicans' new plan to extend Obamacare subsidies. This is absolutely stunning. It sounds like such a good thing, right? The Republicans want to extend Obamacare subsidies into 2017. So that sounds like great news. Senator Ron Johnson introduced a bill in the Senate, and they want cover through the 2016 election so that they don't get accused of taking away people's Obamacare.
This is one of the most cynical things I've seen in a long time. We do have Hal Sparks.
I believe.
Hal, you there?
I think so. Can you hear me?
Yay!
Wow, you sound good.
All right.
Yes.
I haven't used Skype, I think, since the old Mac E-World went out of business. But I figured it out. And especially now that it's tied to your Xbox account, that made it a lot easier because, you know, clearly the nutso gamer that I am, that was actually the window in that saved us this morning. How are you?
We are doing well. I want to quickly, you know, let everybody know who you are in case they've been living under a rock and don't know, the Renaissance man that is Hal Sparks, actor, comedian.
Wait. Ironically, most of my fan base lives under rocks. So it's really people who live above rocks you're talking to.
Yes. Host of the Hal Sparks radio program Mega Worldwide, as well as Zero One, the amazing band. Follow him on Twitter at Hal Sparks. Website, halsparks.com. Listen at chicagoprogressivetalk.com. Did I miss anything?
Stand-up comedian extraordinaire.
Yeah, I got that one in there, but I could have missed like an entire other career that you've been hiding from us this whole time.
Yeah, Lab Rats. My show on Disney XD, which currently our debut for this season, the only thing that beat us on television that night was Empire.
Wow.
Really, we're second only to Empire. So for the little kid show that could, it's kind of amazing.
Yeah. Well, I think that's because of the amazing draw that is Hal Sparks.
I don't disagree. the demographics and the ratings book bear that out, and I stand by it.
Yes.
Yeah. At least I will continue to tell myself that. But it's true enough. Let's just put it that way. Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
So, Hal, I was just telling, while we were waiting to connect here, I was telling the listeners about the Republicans' amazing new manipulation that is to introduce their own extension of Obamacare subsidies. Have you heard about this bill yet?
Yeah, it's basically the same with their name. That's going to be the methodology of the Republicans as far as Obamacare goes. Same, but with our name.
Yeah, but they also want to extend the subsidies with special little sweeteners in the deal, like repealing the individual mandate, employer mandate, and removing the federal rules that require insurance plans to cover minimum health benefits.
So they're not actually doing any of the things that are popular within the bill. And there's no way this is basically an attempt by them to send a veto to the president's desk.
Yes, and then blame the president for vetoing Obamacare subsidy extensions.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
It's one of those, like, drone strikes inside a school lunch program and then accuse your opponent of starving children.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah, it works like a charm on an ignorant electorate, which is, you know, a big part of the goal. I mean, it's why, you know, Bain Capital is through Clear Channel is scooping up radio stations that have a progressive bent and transferring them without any monetary value directly to right wing talk
or sports.
Yeah. Or sports. Right. Just to eliminate the voice out there, because they think that was what did it last time, was that, you know, people are that dumb. The interesting thing about healthcare is this is one of the one areas where the household gets kind of into the nitty gritty. When you get into insurance, you start really, and you know, unless you're one of the right wingers who, like, Obama said I could keep my care if I liked my plan and I liked it. Did you ever use it? No. Do you know what would happen if you actually used it? I'd probably die waiting in an emergency room, but that's not the point. These catastrophic plans that you get rid of, that Obamacare got rid of, because, which was really that point, was really that he's lying to us, was all about that. I liked my plan. Well, your plan wouldn't have saved your life.
Yeah, at least not without spending a small fortune. But we still have a very long way to go. We're going to take your calls. It's Anything Goes here on the Tom Hartman Program with the one and only Hal Sparks. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with your calls and Hal Sparks coming up next. And welcome back to Free Speech TV and the Tom Hartman Program. Hal, are you still with us?
Oh, I insist.
And I don't know if we have your camera shot on for the fine folks at Free Speech TV to check you out.
Let's see if I can video myself up. There's no, well, I don't have a camera available.
Okay.
that. So I apologize.
No worries. We've got a lovely picture of your handsome mug. So tell us what's going on in the world of Hal Sparks and the Hal Sparks radio program Mega Worldwide.
Well, we are dovetailing, of course, as well as you are, into the madness that is the 2016 lead up. And the Republicans are once again packing their clown car and heading to the big top with, 97% people who are trying to get higher speech writing fees or speaking fees, and then a 3% who actually thinks they have a chance of winning who are insane.
Yeah.
And Jeb Bush is the odd anomaly kind of in the middle of that. But I don't know how you guys feel about this, but the whole, like, him being their Romney this time around is a brand new set of crazy that just excites me and boggles my mind as a political wonk. As somebody who really cares about the inner workings of politics in this country, the idea that somehow a third Bush is made okay by a second Clinton, when we're, in the straight up world of the government we chose to get away from in this experiment of America, which is government handed from father to son, the idea that somehow that's on par with the fact that we have another quote unquote Clinton in the office when it's his wife. And we're not talking about a genealogy transfer, like it's some sort of weird skull and bones, like it's your turn, brother, slash King George, said it's I picked this son this time, not that son.
Yeah, I don't think mandated or de facto monarchies, whether it be established like it is in other countries or just because, hey, that name sells and it's popular. I don't think either one is really good for this country.
Oh, don't think for a second that when people talk about this isn't a democracy, this is a federalist republic, and the founding fathers had this in mind. Keep in mind that when they say we need to take our country back to what the founding fathers were talking about, keep in mind they include in that the slavery being legal, women not being able to vote, only white landowners being able to vote. It creates in their head this quasi 1800s shotgun based Ayn Rand utopia where they could pay for everything with a gold coin and a carved out mountaintop, and everybody else has a musket except them. They've got an AR-15 and a Jeep mounted M50 or some nonsense.
Oh, now Hal, you're just being un-American.
No, I'm being what I would call super American.
Yes.
Because when when my retort is freedom, I can be comfortable with that. When somebody says, why do you want some particular political choice of yours?
Did we lose?
Oh, I'm here.
Oh, okay. It's just Skype. It's ducking because of the music starting. But hold that thought. You left us on a tease there as to why you want a particular political view. We're going to be right back with more Hal Sparks and your calls in just a few seconds. And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shano, filling in for Tom today. And we are joined by none other than the great Hal Sparks, actor, comedian, Renaissance man, and host of the Hal Sparks radio program Mega Worldwide. Hal, Shane dubbed this hour. Normally it's Anything Goes, but today it is Anything Goes Mega Worldwide. Is that okay with you?
Oh, I'm 100% behind it. I think the permeance of media is actually both the bane of modern political discourse, but also its salvation. And oftentimes that's how it works out in the great dramas that exist in the world.
Yeah.
Make your weakness your strength is that, the way I look at it. So to me, the fact that this can go anywhere and even beyond the earth eventually, it's going to take a long time for it to catch up with those Hitler television show broadcasts. They've got a head start as far as heading to, towards Andromeda or Betelgeuse or one of those places.
Yes.
But we can try, Maybe I'll pace them.
Yeah. On that note, are you ready to take some calls?
Yep.
All right, let's go. Let's check in with Polly, watching on Free Speech TV in Riverside, California. Polly, thank you for hanging out with us here on the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, it's great. Thank you. I'm in California, so I'm concerned about the drought. And I was wondering, why is that HARP thing sitting in Alaska? And if the taxpayers pay for it, why is it just sitting there? Why can't they use that to bring rain here in California? I would think that that would be one of the easiest things it could do. And it's no secret about it. Everybody knows it's there now. They've been doing chemtrails here like crazy, like every day, and hardly anybody looks up. I don't think too many people are aware of that.
Okay, Polly, let's jump in here and let Hal respond. Yeah. Hal?
Well, we went right for HARP and chemtrails versus contrails right out of the gate. The checkerboard pattern you see in the sky that everybody, you know, calls chemtrails because they just kind of sit there and then they spread into cloud cover. This has always been my, you know, I always use this as my example of when people oversimplify the presidency. When you go, you know, I want a guy in there I can have a beer with, not somebody who's some elite or somebody who, you know, thinks things through. We need somebody macho to do stuff. We can't be, you know, I need somebody slapdash and sure as opposed to somebody who, you know, who's deliberative. That's a little LGBTQ for me. You know what I mean? When they go that way. And my thing is, I always use the chemtrails, call it a conspiracy theory, call it an idea, call it a YouTube lost weekend. Because if you really want to lose a whole weekend, start watching chemtrail videos on a Friday afternoon. And the next thing you know, you'll be watching videos about the flat earth. And there are lots of them. And Sunday, you'll be, you know, by Sunday, you'll be watching videos about how Puff Daddy's a Freemason. which I'm fairly certain he is, but I'm fine with that. Anyways, this is one of those things that people, you know, HARP is a weather experiment and all that kind of stuff. You know what would really, let me stick to my point. The president is often put in a situation. What if you were the president? This is how I always gauge stuff. What if you were the president and they said, guess what? We can affect the weather, but to do it, we have to release barium and aluminum into the atmosphere. Now, that will save millions of lives. But certain people will have a health negative response to it that will kill 10,000 people. That's a presidential decision, unfortunately. And that's why you have to take very seriously the deliberative nature of who you are electing. And the people oftentimes that pull those strings before it even reaches the president's desk, from, you know, policing standards and all those kind of things that save 10 lives but cost 2, and you have to go, is there a better way? You need people who are deliberative and think that stuff through. That's why I'm not for the death penalty. That's why I think, you know, that kind of a decision is always wrong when you're, you know, when you're dealing with that. Okay, so that being aside, as far as the drought in California, we still have companies bottling water in California, and most of our water that's being wasted is going to the meat industry.
Yep.
Is growing food for cows to be slaughtered. Right now, every single calorie of food you consume takes 1,800 calories of petroleum expression to get to your face. In the raising, slaughtering, preparing, cooking, storing, refrigerating, and delivering process, you literally use 1,800 calories of energy for every single calorie. And so if you think of a 400-calorie muffin or a 600-calorie sandwich or an 800-calorie or a 1,000-calorie shake and that kind of stuff, and the more empty the calories get, meaning the ones that don't help you physically, the more damage you're actually doing. So that's why the federal report came out that a vegan diet is better for the country, better for the planet, and all those stuff. It's both an economic and a health response. You'll hear a lot of the meat eaters, you know, squealing because they have a manliness issue, that it's just not manly or tough to, you know, not eat meat. And the reality is, I think it's worth more to have an extra few years with your grandkids than be macho for 3 years out of your life while you're making this stupid argument. But right now, the agribusiness is using up a ton of our water, and we have no source in this state for gathering the water. We have nowhere to put it. It rains here a lot, and it goes into the LA Basin and other river outlets, and it goes straight into the ocean. There is no way to catch it, no way to deal. And this would take a massive, on a level of a Hoover Dam effort, and should be, and it's totally affordable by the state. But this takes sensible politics. This takes people going, we need a genuine solution for this thing, and looking long term.
Yeah. How only you could have, you know, gotten into that broad of a discussion based on one phone call, but that is part of the reason why we adore you. Lots more in store. More of your calls with the one and only Hal Sparks coming up in just a few minutes. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
It's a special Anything Goes Mega Worldwide coming up next. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano filling in for Tom today. He will be back Monday. And it's Friday. It's Anything Goes, a very special edition with the one and only Hal Sparks, actor, comedian, Renaissance man, host of the Hal Sparks radio program Mega Worldwide, which you could check out, among other places, at halsparks.com. Hal, you ready for some more calls after that exciting first one?
Absolutely. If we can get around to, you know, like the capstone on the pyramid or Outworth. A theory with Admiral Byrd. I'm willing to take any of those calls.
I'm not familiar with those. I'm intrigued. I'll have to look them up after the show.
I could do 10 hours on each one of them.
I think you could do 10 hours of radio on any topic.
That's actually true. My own voice, right.
Speaking of radio, let's check in with Mark, listening on Sirius in Buffalo, New York. Mark of the Leslie Marshall Show. It's a radio... family call here.
Yeah.
It is a radio family call. Hal, Danielle, and Shano, hashtag super Americans. I'm stealing that from Hal. I like that, Hal. I really am enjoying listening to you guys, and I'm excited that you're going to be guest hosting for Leslie on May 7th as well. And speaking of radio, I know Hal brought up how Bain Capital is, you know, scooping up these progressive stations and flipping them to conservative. And, you know, a lot of people don't understand, I guess you could sometimes call it the inside baseball of radio, and that you're taking a market, you know, not just radio, but newspaper that is already very conservative, you know, completely turning on its head the misnomer that it's the liberal media. And I was wondering if Hal could talk about that a little more and, you know, what people can do to get involved. And then number two would be Tom mentioned in the break, anyway, when I was on hold, Montana's campaign finance law.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering your guys' thoughts on, you know, what it would take to eventually make that a national movement.
Well, thank you, Mark. Awesome call. And look forward to working with you soon.
Yeah.
You guys are great. I enjoy listening to you.
Thank you. All right. Hal, your thoughts. Go for it.
Well, the as far as the Montana law, I think campaign finance reform, for all the sort of the bluster that we throw around about it on the left especially, is in many ways where gay marriage was in 2002.
Hmm.
Most people, if you really work to confront them face to face, are for it. But if you poll them in a mildly leading way with your question, they'll be wishy-washy about it at best.
Like if you poll them with something along the lines of, are you cool with the Supreme Court limiting free speech by regulating campaign finance?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Do you think people, you know, with, you know, more, you know, do you think the Supreme Court should limit how people can spend their money in regard to their, you know, their political leanings? Like, that's how they'll spin it. That's how they come up. In the same way that are you okay if your child is gay and came out to you getting married in a church down the block from you? Like, that's how they used to couch the question. And if you'll notice, the question changed. The people didn't. Over time, they couldn't ask those BS questions about, you know, about gay marriage or the like, you know, and it, because people would raise an eyebrow and tell them to go pound sand. And the same thing similarly applies with campaign finance reform, especially when you start going the dark money word I like, except for the fact that, you know, we assume dark, it always means bad. And that's always a weird one for me.
Yeah.
But I will say this. Do you like the idea that, and this is where the question's going to shape and change the conversation. Do you like the idea that in 24 hours, a corporation can file papers, exist in the United States for less than 48 hours, and completely anonymously use money, foreign and domestic, to fund a political candidacy? Do you think it's okay that you could form a corporation and money from China, Saudi Arabia, Czech Republic, you know, Russia can come into this country in the form of, you know, investment in a company, have it spent 100% and the company fail in 24 hours, because that's what happened during with Romney. If you remember that one day where he got $1 million, remember that?
And no.
From a company that just went away. That's the thing that will eventually, because it's so easy to do, that the hubris, the reach, will cause people to do it so often that people start going, wait a second. Where'd that money come from? We don't have to tell you. Did it come from the States?
Yeah.
We don't have to tell you.
I think this is a discussion that's going to be forced because, actually, of this attack on Clinton. I think this is going to be a misstep on the right by putting forward this attack ad, because it's going to prompt the discussion of, okay, so where's the rest of all the money coming from?
Yeah, right. Where's your money coming from then? Good. I'm glad you're willing to talk about it. Let's fly that flag and wave it in front of everybody. Let that be a central point. If you're going to make it a central point in your anti-Hillary campaign, you got to make it a central point in your pro-whomever campaign. And none of those guys will.
Yeah.
And not even Rand Paul, who, you know, in theory could run on, you know, I'm not even using American currency. I'm using gold coins and rolling papers to fund my entire candidacy.
And Bitcoins. And right. Bitcoins. Don't forget the Bitcoins.
To be a first Bitcoin candidate, right?
Yeah.
Bitcoin farmer running, you know, machine running.
And on Mark's second point about the radio stations, your show is on WCPT, an amazing station there in Chicago, every Saturday. It's 1 p.m., right?
Privately owned.
Yes. And look
of it.
And
this is,
it's beloved by the community.
Yeah, absolutely is. You know, the problem with, you know, I mean, we can go back to the, you know, the fairness and Reagan all we want to. That's not going to get re-implemented. That isn't. The interesting thing is, watch how the right chases every angle as far as getting a message out there. And the message that they have only affects the same slice of populace that was affected in the first place. And it just makes them crazier. Instead of, you know, by putting Glenn Beck on in San Francisco or in Los Angeles for that matter, instead of, you know, in Hannity and whatnot, instead of shifting, you know, making 10 new people come around to their way of thinking, all they do is make the one crazy dude or crazy lady with all the bumper stickers, you know, that have pictures of, you know, like where's the birth certificate and socialist Muslim and all that kind of stuff. It makes them go out in public wearing a homemade printed shirt with their own, you know, their diatribe kind of in pictograph form with, you know, Obama with horns and Hillary with a pitchfork and, you know, the word idiot under. I literally saw a woman at Whole Foods the other day, of all places, at Whole Foods. This woman is walking around going, and it was because of the Israel issue. She was wearing this shirt that just had, you know, with these people in charge, what could possibly go wrong? And it had Obama, Harry Reid, and Pelosi, and it said socialist under Obama, moron under Reid, because I'm assuming she's trying to make a Mormon reference there slightly, and psychotic under Pelosi. And where, and this is a woman who's shopping at Whole Foods.
Yeah.
Please.
You have to scratch your head on that one. But, you know, what I see happening in response to these radio stations being taken over is so many independent stations popping up. You know, here in D.C., there's We Act Radio, there's X-Ray in Portland. You know, there's so many independent, and they may be a small signal to start out with, but there's so much demand and there's so much hunger for progressive news, progressive talk, progressive information, and local coverage, which is something you lose when these stations get bought out. I think that's going to be, at least in the intermediate time, the solution. And I think that's a great thing. These communities, these stations are vital to their community.
In the age of niche and brand marketing, because that is literally how we live now. It is not about big mass campaigns unless you're the Avengers. But even then, they'll section, I'm not an Avengers fan, I'm an Iron Man fan, or I'm a Ant-Man fan, or what have you. It gets so compartmentalized that actually, by eliminating the corporate version of progressive talk, they have created a more fervent and meaningful movement in the independent radio area. So I actually think it's going to bite them in the ass in a way that will surprise them.
Yeah, I think you're right. Mark, wonderful call. Thank you very much for hanging out with us on Sirius. And again, I look forward to working with you, with Leslie. We will chat soon. We only have about a minute. I will get one call.
Yeah.
One call really quickly in here. Let's check in with Karen, watching on Free Speech TV in Lake River, New York. Karen, real quick one.
Yes, I was wondering when the employee, he asked you to work 4 days for 10 hours, and the rest of the week you are off.
What
you also have to work on the weekend. What does that mean?
Okay, so what it means when you work 4 days a week for 10 hours a day, as far as I know, that's just a different version of full-time. Hal, do you have any other interpretation there?
A lot of times the shift from the 8-hour workday to a 10-hour workday is that can be seen by labor sometimes as a slow bleed towards, oh, we'll work Friday too.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to come in. So it's easier to end up pressuring you into a whole, you working 50 hours with no overtime.
Yeah. See, I used to prefer, I had a job where I could do that, where hours were flexible. And I'd prefer it because I'd have a 3-day weekend. But Karen, thank you very much for the call and for hanging out with us there in New York. You know, who doesn't like a 3-day weekend? So, we'll be back with more Hal Sparks. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
More of your calls here on a special edition, Anything Goes Mega Worldwide with Hal Sparks. Stick around. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program here on Free Speech TV. Hal, let's check in with Kenyatta. Uh-oh, is my system frozen? Kenyatta, are you there in Redlands, California?
I'm here.
Okay.
I'm here.
Okay, Kenyatta, go ahead.
Hi, Danielle.
Hi.
Here's my question. You know that the media is all at Twitter today regarding President Obama not using the word genocide with regard to the Armenian mass killings of 100 years ago. And, of course, right-wing talk radios having a field day with this, but me being the perverted person that I am, I decided to look up that word genocide, and lo and behold, in 48, the International Criminal Court defined genocide as any of the following acts committed with intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnical, racial, or religious group, as such, killing members of the group, causing serious bodily harm or mental harm, are deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. And I could not help but think about all of these shootings of black people in the streets. And then that led me to think about lynching and enslavement. That, you know, in California, we have a 3-strikes rule here, which is disproportionately applied to young black males. And one of those definitions under the International Criminal Court was imposing measures to intended to prevent births within the group. So you take an 18, 20-year-old, 30-year-old, you put them in jail for the rest of their life. Well, they certainly aren't going to have any offspring. So I was just wondering, here's the country.
With the idea of using that word for the way African-Americans have been treated in this country, and and maybe lean towards reparations, or do you think that's a complete cartoon because they're really just using this word as a bludgeon right now? Because they wouldn't, in their own position, call it that either.
Kenyatta?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I don't know, Al.
I really don't. Here's the thing. I love when they go after a politician on the left for stuff they wouldn't do themselves. And if it brings them around to saying, yes, the Armenian massacres were, in effect, genocide, awesome. But understand that because you're a politician and you actually, in principle, a lawmaker and lawgiver in a country, that if you refer to that, then that is now the standard set for everything else. And that's why there's so much tiptoe around this, because then that pulls us into the realities of Rwanda. That pulls us into the realities of what you're talking about with how African Americans and Native Americans have been treated in this country for decades, if not, you know, centuries. And once you start that ball rolling, pin down a Republican on that for a second. Pin them down on you're going after Obama for not using the word genocide in regard to, Armenians. And then go, you know, that standard would apply to blacks in this country.
Mm-hmm. I certainly think that we need to acknowledge the anniversary of Armenia and it being a genocide. But this ridiculous politics of criticizing somebody over one particular word, like whether or not President Obama said terror in the Rose Garden, I think it's such a waste of time, but I agree, maybe turning it back around is the way to combat it. Excellent point, Al. We're going to be right back with more. Stick around here on the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano in for Tom today. It is Anything Goes Friday, so we'll be taking your calls. But I just have a few minutes left with Hal, so I want to get your opinion on a few things.
Sure.
Hal, I don't know if you've seen this recent idea from Representative Steve King about regulating the Supreme Court. Something
sure.
I think we could find agreement on. However, he wants to use it to discriminate against gay people. Thoughts?
You know, there's a reason why we have a three-tier system. The reality is that's not going to go anywhere because the Republicans themselves actually have a long-term strategy as far as national politics that have nothing to do with getting elected to office past a certain point. What they want to do is, and that's why they need to win the next presidency. They're not going to, but they really do need it, or they need to retain control of the Senate so that they can control who gets onto the Supreme Court for the next, you know, three decades or so. That if you can replace who's going in, you know, in there for the next three decades, they will make rulings that are much more in line. And don't think for a second that the upper echelon give a crap about, social issues for real. You
right.
know, they abortion, gay marriage, those kind of issues. Those are for people like Steve King. What they want to do is protect the monetary interests. And that will always be there if they can keep hold of the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is actually what I find interesting. Ted Cruz, unlike by so many in his party, was the first one to float this idea back at his presidential announcement that he would push Congress to regulate the federal courts, but only of their jurisdiction over the marriage issue. Then we see this idea come out of Steve King. I think it's just some strange way of giving Ted Cruz a nod, maybe giving his campaign legitimacy. Coming from Steve King to Ted Cruz, I don't really think it adds any, but
here's the thing.
Good try.
It's never going to happen.
Yeah.
What happens when you do that, and these people are supposedly educated. These people went to universities.
Prestigious universities.
And graduated from, some would even say, elite universities in the Northeast. And they came away with an education that did not make them understand legal precedent. And the idea that there is a slippery slope between making it so that the Supreme Court and the federal courts cannot hear issues on marriage to marriage is not a legally binding organization. If the church doesn't, you know, if the church is the only purveyor of marriage and the state has no interest in it, then there go the marriage tax subsidies, which the Christian right love very much. It's one of the reasons they stay together is for, you know, so they can screw Uncle Sam. And the idea that it would eventually mean that marriage itself would simply be a label and purvey no legal benefits.
Yeah. But hey, if we're going to, you know, if we're going to open that, open that discussion, if you will, can we also regulate the Supreme Court when it comes to things like, you know, deciding that corporations are people, deciding that money is speech, deciding that,
we do have the ability within that. And Ted Cruz arguably has the same ability in regard to marriage equality itself, which is find a way to put a bill through that doesn't get overturned by the populace eventually, where the public doesn't demand their representatives repeal laws or change them that don't benefit their view of the world.
Yep.
Not happen, because that's the whole purpose of democracy, which just leads me to my earlier point that Ted Cruz et al. Have no interest in freedom, in air quotes, or this idea of America as, in its purest form, or the Founding Fathers' ideas. It's a cartoon. They have a corporate tax haven idea. They want us to become the Cayman Islands for religious kooks. And until such time, they will just kind of harp around the sides. And Ted Cruz, watch him make a speech or go to one of those, you know, conservative citizens who love America more than you do conventions. Every time he says something, he does a side eye glance. And anybody who does any kind of, psychological breakdown stuff, and I'm not big on psychoanalyzing people except when it's so overt, he doesn't buy what he's saying. He's literally a shill. He's a bad car salesman.
It's certainly a different theory than I think we've had. I wonder about his connections with religion, but we will have to save that discussion for a different time. In the last couple minutes, Hal, why don't you tell people what's going on Saturday and what's coming up on the Hal Sparks radio program Mega Worldwide?
Well, we of course do the live terrestrial radio. We are a survivor in that world, and on Saturdays, and 9 to 11 Pacific time, and you can listen on the iHeartRadio app, and of course at chicagosprogressivetalk.com. It's the Hal Sparks radio program, Mega Worldwide. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always visit a hashtag we use, HSRPM, when we're talking on the show, and of course on my YouTube channel. Which I always post on the morning of when the show's happening, the link to it. You can actually join in the conversation, as well if you're, you know, sitting at home and don't feel like calling in or can't get in, because we have a lot of calls and it's been kind of amazing. Obviously we're in full 2016 role, and my thing is there's going to be so much attention paid to the presidential elections, paid to the, you know, top tiered offices, that many people give up on voting altogether if they don't feel like that choice reflects on them. And, you know, if they say, I don't like Hillary and I don't like Jeb and I don't like whatever, and I think it's two party system's wrong, blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to, Russell Brand style, I'm going to pull out. I'm not voting. My answer to them is you're lazy.
Well, and it's very important. There are a lot of down ticket races. Long time ago, we used to do a get to know your grassroots candidate type of segment. Hopefully, Hal, we can find out about a lot of down ticket races over on your show. Thank you so much for joining us for this hour and taking calls with us. We really appreciate it. We'll be back with more on the Tom Hartman program.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano in for Tom today. Taking your calls, it's Anything Goes Friday. A big special thank you to Hal Sparks for standing in with us and debuting the first edition of Anything Goes Mega Worldwide. If you want to check out his show tomorrow, tune in to WCPT at 11 to 1 local time, 11 to 1 Chicago time. You can do the math if you're not in the area and listening via ChicagoProgressiveTalk.com or TuneIn or iHeartRadio. I'm not sure which one they're on, but one of our favorite stations and one of our favorite hosts. It was very nice of Hal to join us.
It was. And we love it when Hal would come to D.C. and do the show from right here.
Yes, it was lovely.
Because I'd get to push the buttons and we would laugh for 2 hours.
Right.
So we get to do it long distance now when he's doing it from Los Angeles to Chicago.
So in other news today, General Petraeus essentially has gotten a slap on the wrist over sharing CIA intelligence. While Edward Snowden, Julian Assange, Chelsea Manning, John Kiriakou all faced much harsher sentences. This week, on Thursday, he appeared in federal court, and he was sentenced to 2 years of probation and a $100,000 fine, which notably, thanks to Vice News, is $60,000 more than prosecutors were even requesting.
Okay.
Yeah, so they weren't even requesting that he paid 100,000 times. Meanwhile, Chelsea Manning still sits in, we're comparing apples to apples here. Military personnel, Chelsea Manning still in prison.
And actually, I don't even think we're quite comparing apples to apples. We're comparing a rotten apple to a really nice one. Because in the case of Chelsea Manning is a whistleblower.
Right.
There was a purpose. There was a greater good that Chelsea Manning was trying to effectuate by releasing these documents. It wasn't to impress someone else, for romantic purposes or whatever.
Right.
Chelsea Manning was trying to shed light on what she believed was injustices, inform the American public so that we can make better policy decisions. I think that's a noble cause. Whistleblowing is a noble cause in most cases.
Doing this completely nation a service.
Completely different from showing off.
Yeah.
So I don't even think, like I said, rotten apple to a really nice, shiny Granny Smith or whatever.
Right. And, great quote from John Kiriakou in this Vice News piece. I don't think General Petraeus should have been prosecuted under the Espionage Act, just as I don't think I should have been prosecuted under the Espionage Act. Yet only one of us was. John Kiriakou, who basically committed the same, quote-unquote, using air quotes, crime. Kiriakou, he admitted to revealing the identity of a covert officer to a freelance journalist who did not publish the name, and he just confirmed the identity. Journalist already knew it.
Right.
Petraeus shared binders of information with his mistress.
Right.
Yes. So there's lots more information over at Vice News. Great piece by Liz Fields posted yesterday. But it brings up the bigger issue that I'm hoping to get some calls on today and thoughts, as well as all the wonderful calls that are on the board. We will be getting to all of you guys momentarily. But this whole discussion of insiders versus outsiders.
Yeah. We were talking about that between you and I last night because it came up in the idea of the TPP.
Right.
Because everyone's, oh, there's division within the Democratic Party, or there's division within this party on the TPP. And I think the TPP, more than anything, actually shows that sometimes the party system in certain issues just doesn't fit. It doesn't fit a certain issue because the TPP, the insiders are all for TPP, and the outsiders who represent the working class, the heart of America, does not.
Right.
So this is an insider-outsider issue. When Petraeus gets a slap on the wrist, insider, 20 years in prison or 40 years in prison, outsider.
Right.
And, you know, and Elizabeth Warren spoke about this at length.
She did. In her book,
amazing story.
In her book, in April of 2009, she wrote about an invitation to dinner from Larry Summers.
Treasury Secretary at the
time? Yes. To quote it here, he teed it up this way. I could be an insider or I could be an outsider. Outsiders could say what they want, he told her, but people on the inside don't listen to them. Insiders get more access to push their ideas to powerful people, but insiders also understand one unbreakable rule. They don't criticize other insiders. Think about this when it comes to, you know, economic policy, mm-hmm. the TPP, our foreign policy, and you can see those divisions so clearly. All the way ranging from the White House to the mainstream media.
Yes. And an interesting thing is conservative media is really good at rallying people who think they're on the outside. And for example, Fox claims to be on the outside. You know, we're on the outside. We're on the outside together. We are, you know, we are suppressed and on the outside and fighting for you and the complaining and the moaning and the we're in this together. We're the underdogs. Fox itself, or a lot of conservative, you know, talk hate radio isn't, but they do appeal to people who feel put upon.
Right, but you see this same division even on the right of insiders versus outsiders. You see how, you know, even people like Rand Paul, up until this recent presidential run, he was often dissed by his own party.
Oh yeah,
for being an outsider.
Right now they're having a battle, and this is another insider outsider, I think, over the renewal of the Patriot Act.
Right.
You know, it happens over and over again, and I think it'd be interesting to ask, one, what are some other examples? Because I know we're missing so many of them. Two, what do we do about it?
Right. And, you know, maybe there's some way to create a coalition of the outsiders, the people who really do fight for the middle class, fight for the working people.
I think Ralph Nader wrote a book about it.
I think so.
Yeah.
And would that even be a good idea? Would it be our detriment? You know, if there's so many alliances between progressives and libertarians, you know, about national security, about marijuana policy, about reforming our prison system, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. And we might have different solutions to any of these problems, but we agree that they are problems, whereas the insiders sometimes won't even admit that they're problems.
Right.
You know, we have people who can't survive on Social Security, yet insiders, you know who I might be referring to here, are proposing things like the chain CPI.
Right. And increasing the retirement age, et cetera.
Right. So it just, you know, I think it's an issue worth exploring, worth considering, and wondering what we're missing about it. It's easy to spot, I think, on national security and on economics, like the TPP trade. But there's got to be other ways that this plays in to our national politics, into the way Congress is ran.
And I think it's also an important frame to recognize for when these things like TPP come up and you'll have an insider on the television saying, oh, my God, I can't believe Chuck Schumer's against TPP. That makes no sense. He's a big New York banker. Well, you don't understand because it's not going down the normal lines you're used to looking at. You're used to looking at, you know, these certain divisions that the pundits on TV love to talk about in the horse races, in the personality politics that they love to play on. But putting it in this type of frame, which really is insiders versus outsiders, is more helpful in terms of figuring out how to stop it, I think.
Yeah. How do we stop it without acknowledging, you know, without recognizing that's a problem? And, you know, this revolving door between the administration and Wall Street, as well as Congress and lobbying firms, you know, we had for the first time ever, at least the first time that I'm aware of, mm-hmm. that corporations are spending more in Congress than the taxpayers. We're spending $2 billion a year on the most unproductive, inefficient Congress in history, and it's still less by a lot, by more than $500 million less than what corporations are pumping in. And again, it's insiders versus outsiders. Only it's the insiders that are willing to get those, you know, meetings with the corporate executives.
Able to get the meetings.
Yes.
It's not willing.
Lots of interesting points to this discussion. I would love to hear what you guys think. Back with more here on the Tom Hartman Program. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Are insiders and outsiders more pronounced than the two-party system? What do you think? Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program here on Free Speech TV. Let's check in.
We're done yipping now.
Yeah.
Time for you.
It's your calls all the way through until John Nichols will be joining us in the third hour. So let's check in with Norma in Montgomery, Alabama, watching on Free Speech TV. Thank you for spending time with us today, Norma.
Hi, Danielle.
Hi.
First of all, if you multiply 535 times a base salary of $174,000, that's what we pay the people who sit in Congress. Then you add in $1.4 million base expenses for 18 certified employees. You're pushing close to $100 billion a year for supporting Congress without the expenses of the building and maintenance. But you're the guy that was on talking about the elections and how people don't want to vote. People need to remember that this election, there are going to be 38 senators up for re-election. 14 of them are Democrats. And if you like your Democrat, you need to be able to protect him from whoever they put up to run against them. If you don't like your Republican, you've only got a couple of months to get out there and find somebody to start supporting, because once the silly season starts in August, you really don't have anybody who's going to listen to you in trying to get control of this very expensive Congress that does not work for us, that cost us so much money. Because from August to January, you really can't talk to anybody because you're not talking about the main topic that takes over the country, and that's football. So you need to be able to get out there today and start looking for someone to replace these Republicans who don't work for us.
Well, I think, you know, while I certainly personally agree and I would love to see the Republicans replaced, even if you want Republicans in office, we need to remember that there's more than just the president's election, that we, you know, every 2 years we have to get out there and take a stand on who those lower, you know, lower ranking officials are, all the way down to our dog catchers, our, you know, school administrators, because the closer you get to home, the more those people typically affect your life. And if you don't get out there, get educated about who's running and try and help the people you believe in win, then, you know, you're not going to have the government that you would like to see. Norma,
you're right.
Go ahead. Sorry.
You see, there's something going on here in Alabama a lot of people don't know about. Our budget is like $541 million in the red. And one of the things they want to do here is close the majority of the state parks. They say we don't have enough money to maintain them. And then next year, they probably will either go ahead and lease them to logging companies or they will sell them. And this is something that's going to hit all across the nation, that we're going to lose all of our parks.
Yeah, it's happening throughout the country. They want to give those lands to oil companies and other developers. I'm not surprised that it's happening in Alabama. But, Norma, thank you very much for watching Free Speech TV there in Alabama. It's so interesting how there's these big budget shortfalls in red state after red state after red state. I think we should maybe ask Brownback about that, about how that worked out for him.
Well, actually, I think it's working out exactly as they want. Because when you have those budget shortfalls, as you know, we see, then it's time to privatize.
Yeah.
Time to privatize. See, government failed. It failed because we're lousy at it, but it failed, and therefore let's let the billionaires come in and buy it up and do it for us.
Yeah, we hate government.
At a profit.
Hate government, but they all want to run it. Always funny how that works. We'll be back with more. Stick around. Welcome Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano filling in for Tom today. He will be back Monday. I know last time we were on, people asked us to tell our Twitter accounts. So I will say that Shane is producer Shano, and I am Danielle on radio. Give us a shout out. Let us know what you think. We'd love to hear your feedback, no matter if it's good or bad. And we'll get back to your calls. Let's check in with Ted, listening on WCPT in Chicago, Illinois. Thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman Program, Ted.
Thank you very much for taking the call.
Of course.
I've listened to you now for about the last 40 minutes. Very interesting. It's as if the stars were all aligning. And I must probably admit that I'm a closet progressive that listens to WCPT, I think it is, in Chicago. Mm-hmm. What you're talking about today is the most critical thing a person could do. You got 3 months to organize so that you can find maybe 12 of your friends and volunteers, one that wants to run for office, take that person, pass petitions, put them on the ballot. Everybody should be running for something. And as we go into the primaries, we'll have an ability to take the control back because we have to steal the election fair and square.
I love it.
Steal the election fair and square. Excellent tag you're it type of call, Ted. Excellent points all.
I was in the Illinois General Assembly for 9 terms.
Wow.
I've been away from it longer than I was in it. I was in it for 18 years. Mm-hmm. But in Illinois, we have Speaker Madigan. And everybody knows Speaker Madigan. Since 1970, he's been in the General Assembly. And he's known as the Velvet Hammer. And for 8 years, I was his chairman of the House Appropriations Committee.
Wow.
And I probably should have stayed there because once you have their money, their hearts and minds will follow.
Once you have their money, their hearts and minds will what?
Follow.
Follow. Huh. Okay.
Everybody that wanted state money had to go to my appropriations committee.
I see.
Then I got sold on going to the Senate, and redistricting captured me in a bad election. However, you have to see who's out there and get people to run for office.
Yep.
Now, with 28% of the people voting, it's a lot easier to pick somebody that can win. So let me just jump off and listen to the rest of your show. It's really great.
Thank you, Ted. And great on you for getting people active there in Illinois. It's certainly a place where,
A lot of times when people call in and say, you need to get active and you need to run for office, they often are pointing fingers saying, you need to run for office. We have someone actually, I ran for office. I won 9 times. I served.
Yeah.
You know, so it's even more poignant. So if you have any interest in your, have the abilities, you know, running for office and holding office is a huge responsibility and it's difficult. I don't care what level of government you're in.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you have that, have the skills and the desire, absolutely. I mean, I would have often loved to run.
Well, nothing's stopping you.
Sure. Oh, trust me. Trust me.
Shano for Congress. I'm okay with that.
I'll leave that to my brother.
Yeah. All right. Let's check in with John in Minneapolis, Minnesota, watching on Free Speech TV. Thanks for calling in today, John.
Hi, Danielle. I just wanted to mention a few things about the Armenian genocide.
Absolutely. Today being the 100th anniversary.
Right, right. And I believe over one half of the Armenians were killed by the Turks. And it is not a genocide that is recognized officially by the United States government. And we are allies with a country who refuses to admit that there was a genocide, and also the Germans who were in Turkey at the time, you know, really were good observers of it, and they brought their observations back to Germany, and had a big influence on Adolf Hitler because he said, well, nobody's really remembered these people, so I'm sure they're not going to remember the Jews. Wow. And so I just wanted to say that, and then, you know, also about what is going on in this country as far as certain minority groups may not be, you know, classed as a genocide, but when you have that kind of feeling amongst people in positions of power, i.e. the police, that it's okay to, you know, kill and maim African-American and brown people, you know, without willy-nilly. And they really, and, you know, I haven't seen a backlash. I have not seen any substantive legislative action that is really going to deal with this issue. And I'm kind of surprised, or maybe not surprised, but, you know.
I'm not sure what type of, how much more evident, how many more people need to be impacted for legislation to take place, because there was an article this week in the New York Times that 1.5 million black men are missing, essentially, because they're all in prison. And many of them are in prison for nonviolent crimes, these nonsense, you know, three strikes you're out law, where it can be something that is so trivial that should not put anybody in prison. And a million and a half men, and what are we doing about it? So
Amy Goodman brought up the case of a child from Bronx who was accused of stealing a backpack and refused to take a lesser charge and was on Rikers Island for 3 years, as you know, he was just forgotten about and abused and beaten. And, you know, I mean, the whole thing, this is a disgrace. And yet, you know, there is some interest. I mean, you're talking about it, I'm talking about it, Amy Goodman is talking about it. But, you know, this is, we need to move from, you know, talking about this to creating a society that is democratic for all people, or else we're going to kind of go to the slippery slope of, and I don't think this is an exaggeration, a fascist state run by corporations, i.e. the TPP.
Well, John, unfortunately, I don't know how far we are away from that point, when we can already say openly and in our media that corporations are spending more than we are on our lawmakers. But all excellent points. Thanks for watching today.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
It's Anything Goes Friday, taking your calls here on the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shano, in for Tom today. He will be back Monday. But in the meantime, it is Friday. It is Anything Goes. And we're going to get to your calls in just a second. Just had a woman call in. Do we know her name? Was that passed on? No.
No.
Said that she called her lawmakers in Illinois and got the same answer.
Two senators and a representative.
Got the same answer from all of them about the TPP, SHAFTA, that they hadn't yet made a decision. And being that I normally screen calls, I got this from four different states yesterday.
And I just
Illinois, West Virginia, et cetera.
I just thought of this. If you are going to call your senator and or representative on this, don't ask him about the TPP. I know that sounds strange. Ask them about trade promotion authority.
Fast track.
Instead of the TPP itself, because they're essentially saying, we haven't decided yet. Well, the way this is going to work, or the way the president wants this to work and supporters of the TPP want it to work, is, of course, trade promotion authority comes through first, which Jesse says, first tie your hands behind your back, Congress, and here's the language, and now vote up or down. It isn't here's the language and you can decide whether or not you want to use this trade promotion authority. It's do you want this deal, and we'll tell you the details later. So they can get off the hook saying, well, we haven't seen it yet. You know, it's been, you know, negotiated by, you know, corporations and the administration. So until I see the details, and the devil's in the details, I can't tell you where I stand on this. And therefore, I'm going to take no political heat or any risks. But when it comes to trade promotion authority, that's the votes that's coming up. Are you willing to walk that plank? Are you willing to say it's completely fine that Congress has no opportunity whatsoever to amend, has 60 days or 90 days, whatever it is, up or down vote, no, you know, this is a treaty, but you're going to waive your right to two-thirds vote, or you're going to waive your right to filibuster. You're essentially going to allow yourself to get railroaded in this process. Are you going to support trade promotion authority and see what the answers are? Then I'd be very interested to hear.
Yeah, see if that changes the response.
Tell us, you know, because they may answer your TPP question. So you have to hit them again.
Yeah.
Say, no, I don't mean the TPP itself. I mean Trade Promotion Authority.
Right. Well, the one thing that I will say that we've learned from Senator Bernie Sanders is if you're calling your lawmakers about more than one issue, and in this case, believe it or not, I would consider Fast Track, Trade Promotion Authority, and TPP different issues.
Right.
You need to make those separate calls because they kind of have a running tally about how many people called on each issue. And when you call about more than one issue, you're only kind of getting credit for one of those calls.
Which is so weird.
Yeah, it is. But hey, yeah, hang up, hit redial, do it again.
Sure.
Yeah.
So. Rinse, repeat.
Rinse, repeat. Yes. So anyhow, let's get back to your calls and check in with Mark, listening online in New York, New York. Mark, you had an example of the inside-outside politics.
Yes, I did, Daniela. Before I say that, I just want to say that with you two guys rocking.
Oh, thank you.
You and Shane, it's sort of like student beats teacher. And Tom better hurry back.
He'll be back on Monday. And trust me, those are big shoes to fill. We could never, never fully do it.
I understand that. Okay, so, yeah, so with the inside out, with President Obama's declaration of apology yesterday, with the drone strike killing. The timing of that, right on the heels of the Armenian 100th anniversary of the genocide actions there, is really quite interesting to me. In a sort of statesmanlike manner, he's sort of opening up the connection, I think, because of the timing of it. Turkey wasn't really Turkey during the time of the massacres. It was the Ottoman Empire. And I believe the Armenian massacres were more or less done more in the manner of what happened, say, in Rwanda, where it was organized, but only in the sense of the hate speech. But in terms of the actual killings, it was done sort of locally. And I think that's what happened in Turkey. The Armenians were by and large, you know, Christian, and the Ottoman Empire was Muslim. So I think for Turkey not to admit it after all these years, I think really holds that country back, right? Because it's always been sort of one foot in the east, one foot in the west. And I think they keep holding themselves back by not really just, you know, confessing to the truth.
So are you getting to an inside-outside point as far as in the quote-unquote Western nations, in the Western world being the inside and many other countries being the quote-unquote outside?
Okay, what I'm saying is that the president being the ultimate insider, right, the comment was made earlier that you never criticize another insider.
Right? Got it.
So by apologizing publicly for this killing of one country's actions to people, it kind of opens up the window again to the criticism of Turkey.
Hmm. Interesting.
Well,
you know what? It also raises another question. And it just came to me. You said the president, you said here, the president, the ultimate insider. Now think about this. Is a president by definition always an insider? Have we had presidents who aren't insiders? Or once you take the oath of office, are you instantly an insider or not? I would argue that Jimmy Carter was an outsider and is to this day. It's interesting. Is it time for a president who's an outsider, like Bernie Sanders? Well, that's an easy one. you know, what is the benefits of having a president who's an outsider versus an insider?
Right.
I think it's interesting.
Does being an insider give a president more power to negotiate, more authority? Is that a good thing? Or would being an outsider encourage somebody to stand up?
I would argue that President Barack Obama is not an insider on a lot of things. I think he's been so othered and so disrespected. I don't think many of the senators and congresspeople, certainly that we've seen evidence, that certainly don't think of him as part of their group, their clique, their insider, you know, backroom, whatever it is.
Yeah, all interesting thoughts. Mark, I will have to mull that one over,
yeah.
But it's certainly thought-provoking.
Yes.
Thank you very much for listening and spending time with us there in New York.
I think he has one more.
You guys are great. Take care.
Thank you. Let's jump to Larry, watching on Free Speech TV in Eveleth, Minnesota.
Yes. Excellent. Good morning, Danielle and Shano. Wonderful job, kids. Tom should worry. You kids do wonderful.
No, never. But thank you, Larry. Go ahead.
Just a couple of strange, quick thoughts. And I like Stephanie. Okay. I must have a Republican cat in the house.
I think all cats might be Republican. Yeah.
Well, they're aloof, that's for certain.
Yeah.
To make two quick points, Stephanie Miller likes to call the Republican candidates the crazies and the clown car, but to paraphrase somebody else, it's a crazy train. And I hope America understands that almost every one of them realizes they can't possibly be the president, but all that money is good, and they don't have to give back the campaign money, do they? That's question number one.
I don't believe that they have to give back the campaign money.
There are limitations on how it can be spent.
Right.
What a life.
Yes, there are people who just kind of perpetually run for office who, whether or not they're elected, they constantly just want to put themselves in the limelight. They want the donations. I mean, even some who have previously been in office, Rick Santorum, you know.
But there are limitations on how you can spend that money. If it's been donated to your campaign, you can't go buy a sports car.
No.
I think it has to be used for certain ways.
You get a nice limo to haul your campaign executives around with.
I would imagine so, yes.
Right.
The other question would be, if the abolishment of slavery told the world that people are not property, then how come corporations get away with saying we are people? Mm-hmm. Corporations are property. People are not. People mm-hmm. own corporations. Corporations are not people. I guess what I'm saying is if we're all limited to what we can spend for getting our particular candidate in office, where do they get the special treatment being able to spend limitless amounts of money? A corporation is not a person. It's a thing. It is owned by people. People cannot be owned, and corporations cannot be people.
I'll
let you kids handle this one.
It makes so much sense when you say it, Larry. I'm going to let Shano take that one, as he is the legal scholar here.
Well, see, this is the kind of the fly in the ointment in that – for certain purposes, we actually want corporations to be people. And I know
legal persons, not human persons.
And it really does mean that. Legal persons, the thing is just, they've said corporations are people, and they didn't say whether it was a legal person or a natural person. Of course, corporations are not natural people. They've just kind of gotten rid of the modifier and applied people for their own convenience sake in terms of campaign finance. We want corporations to be legal people, because otherwise, how do you sue a corporation? You know, it'd be very difficult to sue a piece of property. You can't sue a piece of property. You have to sue the owner of the piece of property. For all kinds of reasons, corporations have to own other property. A property can't own a property. A legal person has to own the property. So there are some reasons for that. But we do need to differentiate between legal persons and natural persons, and they are not natural people.
Right, and limit how those legal persons can participate. In my opinion, they should
most specifically, these legal persons should not have 14th Amendment rights.
Right.
Period.
It makes perfect sense to me, but apparently this is a difficult issue for other people. Back with more of your calls right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Actually, I lied. We'll be back with the Talk Radio News Service right after this, and then more of your calls. Stick around. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program here on Free Speech TV. Let's check in with Doug in Jamul, California. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV, Doug.
Well, I'm just amazed. I'm in the belly of the beast, and I'm kind of amazed that you're actually going to take a call that has an opposing point of view. That just flabbergasts me.
Doug, we welcome opposing views here. Do you actually have a point?
Yes, my point is that why do progressives consider low-info Democrat voters' votes more sacred than Republican votes because they refuse to support proof of citizenship and photo ID requirements?
And how does that have anything to do with low-information voters or which votes are more sacred?
Because you're the ones that are saying that blacks, low-info Democrat voters, Hispanics, women, the studies done by your think tank, the Brennan Center for Justice, which proves that that low info Democrat voters are not motivated enough.
I think you're misinterpreting low information with low income.
Yeah.
Low income, meaning that they don't have money for an ID.
No, I'm not. That's not part of the study.
Okay.
The study showed by your own think tank that you always like to use for that false voter fraud information that has been debunked by Hans von Spassky point after point shows that that center, the Brennan Center for Justice.
Okay, let's not talk about it. Let's go back. I really appreciate
one
this,
One point
Doug.
At a time, Doug.
Doug, let's not debate the Brennan Center because I have nothing to do with them. I do listen
I
to
them.
And they're great, but I'm just saying they're not mine. They certainly are not mine. We don't actually all think as one. We're not just one amorphous blob of progressivism. But let's go back to I think you set up this whole question up with a false premise that somehow progressives value certain votes over other votes. Progressives, let me state our position, value all votes, and we are in favor of all people voting who can legally vote. And we believe that using voter IDs unnecessarily restricts voters in situations where there's not a huge amount of voter fraud. That's our position. Not the
well,
one.
You know that's a false position because you don't know our system. The Democrats created the system. They voted down proof of citizenship requirement.
Right, because proof of citizenship is a solution in search of a problem. There is no problem.
That is a propaganda because here's the propaganda.
Okay, Doug, that's enough propaganda from me.
Okay, let's just put it this way. If there was this rampant voter fraud out there, it would have been prosecuted like crazy
trouted through the media on every other, every other Fox segment.
And remember, the Bush administration fired U.S. assistant district attorneys attorneys general, because they were tasked with going and finding voter fraud cases. They came back and said there aren't any, and the Bush White House said, you're fired. A big scandal happened a while back. It doesn't happen. Once in a very great while, there are some people who have served their time in prison and I believe should be able to vote because they were off probation on that. They vote and they say, oh, we didn't know. Who would go out of their way to vote illegally in two different places and face years in prison? It just doesn't happen. It certainly doesn't happen at the level that's going to influence any election in any significant way.
Right. Not to influence any election, but since, you're asking who, the answer would be Ann Coulter and Mitt Romney as a matter of
opinion. Well, that's registration. There's a fine line.
Voter registration fraud.
Different than voting fraud.
Still, we can have fun with that game. Anyhow, we'll be back with Luke Vargas of the Talk Radio News Service. Stick around. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle, here with Shano, in for Tom today. And the question is, who are you thankful for? To see an example, go to thanklist.com, watch, and see the story of Sholin and Kier, the slave from South Sudan. Luke Vargas of the Talk Radio News Service, what's in the news today?
Hey, good afternoon. Calling in from the United Nations, where it's actually a rather slow day, so my attention has been turned to the White House, where spokesperson Josh Earnest has just wrapped up, I'm not exaggerating here, about 45 minutes in total of questions on the American drone policy. This is not my field of expertise, but I can say with a high degree of confidence that the sum of his words today will be analyzed for years, I'm sure, by both academics and people concerned with international law. I mean, again, I'm used to at the UN spokesmen really shutting down these kinds of questions instead of gauging in a pretty lengthy back and forth. Some of the big takeaways here are that the administration is still not using the word drone in any way to refer to the attacks in January that killed those two hostages, including an American, as well as two other American citizens who were members or believed to have been members of Al-Qaeda. Also very interesting is that they are not admitting that the purpose was to kill anyone. They used this fancy turn of phrase, which we've become more and more common with, talking about the American drone policy, that we wanted to take them off the battlefield, putting that much munitions onto a poor concrete building is a pretty sure way to kill someone. So, again, explanation there.
That is a strange turn of phrase. Sorry, go ahead, Luke.
Exactly. And then in the third part, a lot of reporters were pressing Earnest to say, did you believe, and this is has been set up before as an important criteria for whether or not it would be allowed to target an American, to take out American citizens using drones, do they possess an imminent risk of carrying out an attack? That question was asked over and over again. And the logic supported by Ernest, he never answered it directly, but he essentially said they were members of a group which has members in it that are imminently trying to carry out attacks. Again, not admitting that the intelligence showed that these two American members of Al-Qaeda were themselves imminent risks to carry out attack, but merely their membership in a group that wanted to do so seemed to be enough to reach that threshold. So again, not a huge, easy story to write here with the tearaway headline. But again, I think that some of these words will be talked about for quite some time because it was a very lengthy and, you know, winding explanation for the American drone policy.
Yeah. Do you think that this could mark the turning to a new policy of more transparency, or do these vague phrases and comments like removing someone from the battlefield imply that maybe we're only getting the facade of transparency and not getting any real information?
Well, you know, we don't really know all the details of these independent investigations, one independent and one internal that the president pledged yesterday. So, again, I'd be prejudging if I, you know, said I had any, you know, concrete expectations for what kind of reforms might be made here. But I thought it was telling that at many times in today's briefing, Ernest referred to language that Obama used many years ago on these topics. It does not sound like there is a conscious effort to really holistically and in a public fashion rewrite what the American policy here is. It looks like the explanations of the past, at least for the time being, seem to suffice for the White House's purposes.
Well, anything else come up at the press conference or anything in the UN, perhaps about the 100th anniversary of the Armenian genocide?
It's been sort of a little act of theater here at the UN, not using the term genocide for what I think many people would say is one of the clearest cut examples of a genocide. In fact, the man who coined that term very often referred to the Armenian genocide as being one that completely fit the criteria. Atrocity crime is the wording that the United Nations seems comfortable using. But another headline I do want to mention is we're just starting to get a concrete sense now of what European Union countries basically pledged yesterday for the migrant crisis in the Mediterranean. We're seeing now a tripling of funding for search and rescue efforts, which is still short of the funding that Italy alone was providing last year for their very lauded rescue program, so falling a little short there. Where this is intersecting with the United Nations is that Italy is reporting that both Great Britain and France are going to pursue some sort of resolution at the Security Council to seek permission to launch military actions within Libya, essentially to try to take out the boats that smugglers would be using before they get filled with people and before they embark on what is so often a deadly journey towards Italy, Malta, or Greece more often these days. So I haven't seen any of this language coming through. My sources here at the United Nations say this is really still quite a preliminary pledge by Great Britain and France to do this kind of request for military intervention. But again, I would imagine this will not be an easy sell to the Council. Many people, you know, still criticize big elements of the last military campaign in Libya, and I think there is trepidation about further intervention in the country, especially now that the Islamic State controls many of those ports. It would be very risky for any personnel involved in trying to take out those traffickers for boats when you're dealing with an enemy like that in the harbors.
And I can't imagine that would play out well in a public relations issue. I mean, isn't that essentially just damning people to die on land as opposed to drowning at sea?
Yes, that's a criticism we've heard. And you know, it's worth pointing out every indication is that kind of resolution could not actually be implemented until there's been a political solution to the crisis in Libya. That does not, by any stretch of the imagination, seem close at hand. So I would say, you know, we're at least talking about something that could be implemented 6-12 months down the line, assuming, and again, it's far from an assumption, that some sort of political power-sharing agreement can be settled in Libya. In fact, that seems, again, further away from being realized than it has in quite a long time.
It's really a strange solution to a very serious problem. Last time I checked, 3,400 people passed away in the Mediterranean just in 2014, and that number continues to grow this year. We'll have to watch that. Lou, thank you so much for telling us about it and keeping us up to date.
You bet. Take care.
Luke Vargas of the Talk Radio News Service. Remember to check out thanklist.com /watch to see the story of Sholene and Keir. We'll be back with more. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. It is Friday. It is Anything Goes, and we're going to go back to your calls. Just a quick note that the Statue of Liberty is currently being evacuated. A bomb squad is on its way there, so we'll keep an eye on that and let you know if we hear any more news on that. And we're going to have John Nichols, Washington correspondent of The Nation, up in about a half an hour to talk about the TPP and Hillary Clinton. So that should be interesting. And I want to give a shout out to Shano over there.
My new church. I joined a church this morning.
You joined the Church of Bacon.
I did.
And that is a real thing. Yes.
And that's actually what they say. Bacon is a real thing as opposed to. And and by the way, it isn't all about worshiping bacon. For those of you, if you're interested in looking at it, it's at praisebacon.org. It can be vegetarian bacon too.
Yes.
So, you know, anti-pork.
It can be tofu bacon.
Yes. So it's not actually about bacon.
Yes, but it says bacon is our God because bacon is real. And you can check out their 9 commandments, which are actually pretty admirable, over at praisebacon.com.
Essentially, they're a nonprofit, atheist.
Nonprofit, but they spell it
PROPHET.
Yes.
And they haven't registered as such because one of the things is we pay our taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're out. They do charitable work, but at the same time they pay their taxes, and they also are out there to try to shine a light. You have the spaghetti monster essentially there to mock religion, mm-hmm. which whatever. They are actually out there trying to point out the special privileges that just saying you're a religion gets you, and that's really not fair. That they really should be treated more like every other nonprofit.
Yes, but congratulations, Shano, on your new membership to the Church of Bacon. And
it's worth reading because if you read their 9 commandments, other than the bacon part, which is just kind of the joke part to get people in to read about it, if you were to follow their 8 of the 9 commandments, you would be very Christ-like.
It is interesting.
A lot more Christ-like than many of the Christians we see running around. So it's cool. It's actually not anti-religion. They're just skeptics. So it's not even mean. It's not even meant to be mean against religion as a concept, but more about the tax exempt status of churches.
Yeah, I think it's admirable, and I think bacon is delicious. So
you're gonna get more calls on
that
than my church.
I know, but buy some sustainable bacon or turkey bacon or tofu bacon, whatever works for you. But it is all delicious. Just saying.
Oh no.
Yes.
After we had Hal on in the first hour, did you learn nothing?
And Desi, the last time we got hosted. I know. But we get sustainable
bacon. Almond-crusted you know.
Yeah, almond-crusted bacon. I'm going to hell for that right there. Yes.
No,
yes.
Actually, you were single-handedly making
with an
California
avocado
dry
on the side. Yes, I know.
You're just a big water suck.
Oh, I'm just going to leave that there. Let's check in with Ray in McHenry, Illinois, listening on WCPT. Thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman program today, Ray.
Yeah. Excuse me. I'd like to encourage people to start using a term more, and it's purchase speech. Tom often talks about money equals speech, but that way of framing it's not working. It's not changing. I know the Supreme Court looks at it that way, but every time we talk about commercials and TV and radio stations and all that and ads, it's purchase speech. It's not free speech. It's anything but free. If it was free, I could buy a commercial. I can't do that. I can't afford one. And I think we need to keep constantly make that distinction between free speech, which is what I'm doing right now, or of writing a letter to the editor, and purchase speech, which is somebody using their money to buy a bigger voice in the democracy than I have or you have. So I'm just trying to encourage people to make that distinction. It's not free speech. It's anything but free. It costs $30,000 for a commercial, for a 30-second commercial in some places.
A lot more when they get these political ads opposing each other and vying for airtime towards elections. I'm sure that they're even more than that. You know, it's not unheard of to hear them making million-dollar ad buys.
And maybe Shana would be able to answer this better. Once you start framing it and everybody starts adopting that term that it's purchase speech, that makes it commerce. And we do have a right to regulate commerce.
Right. But
interesting question, Ray.
Right. If you call it purchase speech, but since it's purchase speech in the political realm, they're still going to call it political speech. That's kind of the foundation of the Citizen United decision. I'm not saying I like it. But
there's a one thing between what is in the legal part of it. Mm-hmm. I'm saying just as a meme out there in the public.
Oh, sure.
We need to start separating between. No, that's not free speech.
Right.
Well, the guy paid a lot of money for that voice, and it's not free. It's not the same thing I have. He's got a lot of money.
Right.
It's purchase speech, and we need to make that distinction amongst ourselves publicly, even if. It doesn't affect the law.
Yeah, right, because the first battle it has to be won in public opinion and public support and public outcry before you even get to that legal battle again. Yeah. So it is important to win those first, because then the legal case comes up, and then popular perception and ideas. And even if it doesn't come up in a court, it could come up as an amendment to the Constitution. And then you definitely need to win the popular support.
Because we're allowing them to, even publicly and in a general way people speak about things, to say, well, that's free speech. No, it's not free speech.
Oh, they went even further.
Yeah,
They call the move to amend.
Gratitude.
Even worse. There's the new First Amendment. Because remember, they like to put the Constitution out there as the sacred document. Oh, you want to change the First Amendment forever. That must be evil because our Constitution is the best thing ever.
But Ray, thank you very much for listening there on WCPT. The fact of the matter is we can regulate speech. You know, there are plenty of instances where we already regulate speech. And we just need to make the rule that it's okay to regulate certain types of political speech, that we decide as a nation which ways we'd like to regulate that as a nation, and which types of speech, i.e. money, that we don't want
speech is
controlling
our
democracy.
Our speech at this moment is being regulated because we're over FCC airwaves.
Yes.
And we're fine with that. That is fine. Why? Because there would be a detriment to society if we use certain terms that are offensive. It could hurt people, and we don't want to do that. So that's a fine regulation. That's a regulation on the First Amendment, on our speech, by our government. Wouldn't you think that spending a boatload of money on a campaign that would essentially buy politicians for yourself, wouldn't that have a detrimental effect on society? Absolutely. And therefore, regulations are allowable in this situation. The Supreme Court is just wrong. Whether you think that money is speech or not, it is regulatable. It always had been until just a few years ago. And it's nonsense. And unfortunately, because we have a Supreme Court that is going to be there, many of them, for so darn long, we're going to have to amend the Constitution. And it's too bad they got it so wrong.
Yeah. Do we have time for one quick
one? Sure.
All right. Let's jump to Ben listening in Rosedale, New York. Ben, thanks for listening to the Tom Hartman program.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure, and I appreciate you and Shano filling in for Tom.
Thank you.
You guys are doing a great job.
We sincerely appreciate the
advice. Don't be in a rush to snatch the pebble from the master's hand. Yes.
We're in no rush.
But, no. Zero. But we thank you sincerely for listening, along with everybody else who's listening right now. But go ahead with your point before we run out of time.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My question is, I don't understand why we are giving these libertarians, who I think we could fairly call anti-Democrats, why are we letting them take over our country? And I guess the bottom, why don't we consider their threat as much or equal to what we had as a communist threat in the 60s? These people want to kill our democracy. Then they're not mistaken. They want to take away people's right to vote.
Right.
It's not a mistake. They don't believe in democracy.
Right.
They're libertarians.
Well, I don't even know. I think even calling it libertarians is a stretch in a lot of ways.
It is,
remember, libertarianism is just a label.
Yeah. Ben, we will have to jump to that after the break, but I do think there are people who call themselves libertarians who believe in our democracy, who honestly and truly believe that what they are fighting for is going to make this country better. I think that a lot of them are co-opted by people and corporate powers that have no such interest. But thank you very much for listening to us there in New York. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What do you think? Libertarians? Seditionists? I don't know. I don't think so. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program.
Do we want to do the libertarian thing here? You want to wait till the other side?
I was going to wait till the other side.
Okay,
so that the people who aren't able to hear us right now can hear a response to that.
Cool.
It was a lot to try and digest there in 10 to 20 seconds.
Got it.
But... Yeah, I think I understand the sentiment.
Mm-hmm. We'll do it on the other side.
we'll talk. We'll get back to that. But real quickly, let's check in with Charles in Opa-locka, Florida, listening online. Charles, thank you for spending time with us today.
Oh, I do it every day, and thanks for everything that you guys do.
Thank you.
I just got a couple quick things that I wanted to say.
Sure.
First of all, the conservatives, they've got everyone thinking that we're low information voters. But we have to look at it that they've taken away so much millions of dollars from education.
Yeah.
And once you do that to kids, you don't have civics as a course, not even in high school, in most high schools, how can, certain demographics relate to what's going on?
Yes.
If we have a problem at some level where some people can't read and write, so that goes to someone else's favor. It's not ours. And then they want to turn it around and say we're low information voters. If we were low information voters, then how come we're out there trying to steal elections if we don't really know what's going on?
Yeah,
I think there's quote unquote low information voters on both sides or on every side, however way you want to phrase it, simply because there are so many people who are out there working two jobs, who are raising, a family, who are trying to get an education, maybe going to school at night, and they don't have time to follow politics and dig through site after site because they're not getting information on their, nightly news or...
And if you're referring to Doug, I think Doug's definition of a low information voter was anyone who voted for a Democrat. I honestly think that's what he was saying.
Yeah.
Well, what I'd like to say is, if you have people that's incarcerated or people that, don't think that the government is going to work for them, then of course not. They're not going to bring their kids out to right. these, election drives or realize that grandma, granddad, or mom or dad are at the polling places working because you have to vote.
Right.
So, that also works against us. And one more thing that I had to say. And I've been trying to say it on this program for a couple of years now, and I can't get it out. But finally, you guys, I think that conservatives and big business are against solar power only because they're researching it now. They're trying to find a way to get, take advantage of it so that they can still charge us like we're doing, they're doing us with the utilities.
Yeah, because, I totally agree with you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I totally agree with you on that one, but I think they're finally figuring it out. You're seeing these communities charge a really high connection fee or essentially charge people to sell their extra energy back to the grid or charge people to, you know, to essentially install solar panels on their own house. And that's just one of the ways that they're doing so. And I have to actually, I will give a shout out to Tea Partiers who are fighting that in a lot of areas because they want to have the freedom to put a solar panel on their own house if they want to. It's one of those areas that I think we actually agree with the libertarians. Charles, I think you're right on. Excellent points as always. Thank you very much for spending time with us today. We will be back with more. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Danielle here with Shano in for Tom today. Tom will be back on Monday, and I want to quickly remind everybody, if you're in the UK, check out schumachercollege.org.uk or go over to the Tom Hartman website to find out about a special class that Tom will be teaching in June.
Professor Hartman.
Yes, Professor Hartman. And I wanted to get back to an earlier caller who asked why we don't lump libertarians in with communists and Marxists.
I don't think lump in is probably the term you use, yeah. But more, why aren't we as concerned?
Right.
Why aren't we? Because a lot of the rhetoric seems anti-democratic. And I would say the anti-democratic policies out of libertarians probably aren't libertarian. You know, libertarianism right now, it seems to be, is more of a label that's cool and hip, porn and pot, to get younger voters in. And really what they're about is, you know, getting money to the top 0.1% of the country. It's not really about – they're just trying to sell freedom as a cool idea and get more suckers in. And that's why I'm not that concerned about it. I'm more concerned about libertarianism as being simplistically seductive.
Yeah.
Not that somehow it's they're going to destroy our democracy. What's going to destroy our democracy is not libertarianism. It's the billionaires behind it.
Yeah.
That I'm concerned about, absolutely.
Yeah, I think we need to differentiate the individuals who might consider themselves libertarian versus, like you said, Shane, the corporate powers, the Koch brothers, who are pushing a libertarian agenda. Because I think there's vastly different reasonings behind their efforts. I think individuals honestly believe that is a better version, a better way forward for our country. And we can disagree on that. We can talk about why we disagree. I think that is very different from people like Charles and David Koch, who understand that this is a way for their corporations to get more money.
Right, and then become essentially using libertarianism as a essentially a pathway to fascism.
Right.
Because fascism isn't sexy nor seductive.
And I, just on a personal note, you know, I have the pleasure of sitting and taking calls from you guys every day, and I speak with people who strongly consider themselves conservatives or libertarians or somewhere, you know, not on the average label of a spectrum. And I think that many of them are good people. And
we have far more in common in terms of our goals. What we want in terms of we want to be free, we want to be happy, we want to have the opportunity, we want to be successful, we want to be secure, friends, family, those types of things. 99% of what we want for ourselves and for the people around us is exactly the same. It's just our policies, the way we get there. And I realize that's what we're having this discussion about, and that's why it can get so heated. Yep. When it comes down to it, the human condition is the same across the board.
Yes.
I don't care, you know, whether you work for Heritage or you work for Center for American Progress. You kind of want the same things.
I honestly believe that for the most part, and I make that separate of many of the people, the corporations, the lawmakers
pushing
those ideas.
Absolutely. I'm talking about individual human real people.
Yes. But anyhow. Let's get back to Anything Goes. Before we get to the great John Nichols, let's check in with Marty in Evergreen Park, listening on WCPT. Thanks for calling today, Marty.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Excellent show today.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure hearing you guys take over the radio for a few hours. anyways, but I just wanted to bring up, I saw on MSNBC on Earth Day, they were having they had a really startling documentary. I think it was called Just Eat It, where they were talking about food waste and just how prevalent it is and just how very few people actually really think about just how massive of a problem it is. And more importantly, they mentioned how all of that food waste, when compacted in landfills, turns into methane, mm-hmm. which we all know is a very potent greenhouse gas. So just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on how we can tackle that problem and have an intelligent discussion on how do we better position our agriculture and how we distribute food in this country.
Yeah, excellent point, Marty. I hear your phone ringing, so I'm going to drop you off and answer it afterwards. But thank you for listening. I saw the same commercial. I didn't see the actual documentary, but mm-hmm. I think so much of that food waste, number one, could be feeding people.
Yeah.
You know, people could not be going hungry, and instead food is tossed aside because there's a spot on a piece of fruit or it's shaped a little funny.
A lot of it is at the retail or at the wholesale level in mm-hmm. terms of sorting out food that is visually sellable. And that's a huge problem. And I haven't watched the entire documentary myself, but I know that's a gigantic problem. I think awareness is the biggest thing of all. You know, you and I, we were just commenting about this, what 2 weeks ago, about bananas we've been buying?
Yeah.
That we started buying a different kind of banana. All right? This is a type of banana where you look at it, you're like, oh, my God, this must be terrible and mushy.
It's all brown on the outside.
All brown. We open it up, and actually the outside is brown, the inside's perfect. It's the complete opposite in terms of banana than the GMO, whatever the heck we had been buying before, where the outside is beautiful. So you pick it up on the show. Oh, yes, I will buy that banana. That's a gorgeous-looking banana. You open up, and it's mush.
Right.
So I think people, if you stop equating this idealistic-looking apple with what is good for you, what is healthy, what's good for our environment,
yeah.
and say, this is going to give me my body the energy it needs, and it's not going to hurt anything. I don't care how it looks. The more we know about that, the more we'll make the right decisions, and the stores can stop throwing it away.
Yeah, I would rather have, partly joking here, partly serious, but I'd rather have an ugly banana or an ugly apple.
That's yummy.
That's delicious and healthy than a genetically modified one, and I would certainly rather have that than to know that people are going hungry in this country while food is just sitting and being tossed out, as is often the case. There's a lot more attention on farm workers. Mm-hmm. And, this all plays in.
Well, Hal was talking about the amount of energy it takes for the food to get to you. A lot of that is travel time.
Yeah.
Because we're not,
buy local.
Local foods, local farmers, smaller farmers, not these mega farms that, burn up so much carbon getting the food to our doors.
Yeah.
Realize it's necessary in some parts of the world just because of climates. Canning, freezing, those types of things also help.
But as we learn more about this stuff and we talk about it, we can certainly go to our stores, our food producers, and say, hey, give me the ugly apple.
Yeah, buy the ugly apple.
I will take it.
It's small, but it's worthwhile.
Exactly. And little by little, we can make a difference in those ways. We're going to come back with John Nichols about the TPP. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Can Hillary win the hearts of progressives by coming out against the TPP? He'll answer that question for us next. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. We're trying to reach John Nichols, so we'll, in the meantime, check in with Kevin. Listening on Sirius in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, my hometown. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. Thank you for listening today.
So tying in some of the Citizens United conversation and the topical situation with Hillary, just to be clear, I'm not a big fan of how she handled that, and it's a little suspicious. But on the other hand, I'll take her over any of the Republicans any day, although I do much prefer some Bernie Sanders or some of the other options we have, but she is our candidate, it looks like. But what I wanted to say is the hypocrisy is just driving me nuts. If they, the Republicans playing politically are going to obviously trash her, because of the suspicion around where the money came from and all this sort of stuff. But on the other hand, they're ignoring the fact that each and every one of them has been taking money from God knows who, terrorists for all we know. We can make basically claim that John Boehner, Mitch McConnell and all of them, going back to, even Mitt Romney, how many hundreds of millions of dollars of terrorist money did they take? Well, I can't prove that they did, but they can't prove that they didn't, because none of that money is disclosed. However, Hillary's money is disclosed, which is why there is an issue with it. So, you know, the hypocrisy, if they're going to try and attack her, they're going to have to defend their use of Citizens United and the money that they're getting from who knows where.
Yeah, and to me, it doesn't have to be anything so extreme as taking money from terrorists. I'm just as upset. Well, maybe not just as upset. That would be a little extreme. But I am, you know, very much upset that people on either side are taking money from corporations. I don't want corporations controlling our government. With that said, I have noticed in my own personal feelings, Kevin, and I'm curious of your thoughts on this as well. For me, I was not necessarily a strong Hillary supporter, but I keep instinctually wanting to defend her when the Republicans attack. And I feel like their continued criticism of her, their continued attacks on her, especially when it's over petty or sexist, misogynist type comments, only makes me want to support her stronger. Is that just a female thing, or do you perhaps notice the same feelings?
No, it's me too. I mean, every time I hear Marco Rubio's name, being that I'm from Florida, and I realize what a complete waste of time that guy is and how he's wrong on everything and that he's even close in the polling lately, I'm like, God forbid, you know, I mean, what do we need? Nobody learns from the past, I guess. But no, Hillary, I'm not that hard against her. It's just that when you have like Elizabeth Warren in the wings and some of these others that could definitely represent us more favorably. But the thing with Citizens United, as much as I'd love to see it go away, I was talking to a conservative on this, and they had a really good point. They were pretty in between. They were reasonable. And their issue is more about the transparency. And I have to agree that if somebody wants to take millions of dollars from a corporation, that's their right. Let them do it, but make it transparent, because then I can vote based on what you're doing. If you decide to do that, then I have the information when I go to vote for you. And that would make a big difference, even if we don't get the whole thing taken away.
Right. That was the Supreme Court's intention.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. When you were talking with your conservative friend, did you point out the fact that that legislation has been brought up a number of times, and it's been the GOP that has filibustered and blocked it? Because they may talk a nice game, oh, if it was just transparent. But when push comes to shove, saying, here's the bill to make all these donations transparent, they say, oh, no, we're not going to do that, because then people wouldn't feel at liberty to speak.
Yeah, I didn't realize at the time when I had that conversation, because this is going a while back. However, I've heard Tom bring that up lately, and I'm like, I'm ready to have that discussion again.
Good. So. I'd be interested to hear. Please call back if you have the opportunity. I'd love to hear that one.
Yeah, absolutely. But, Kevin, you know, excellent points. And, hey, if they want to have that discussion, I am fine with having that discussion, because regardless of whether it's our candidate or their candidate, whoever gets the nomination on either side, I would like to know where that money, corporate, foreign, where it's coming from. That is important information, and we deserve that information
on
who we're going to vote for.
And that's why we must elect a Democrat, whether it be Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, or Hillary Clinton, to the White House, because the Supreme Court is, I would say, one vote short of saying even requiring disclosures is a violation of the First Amendment, because it will scare people off and they won't feel at liberty to speak their mind, because they might get the public backlash from it. So if we get a Republican in the White House, they get to nominate 2, 3, 4 justices of the Supreme Court. You're never getting transparency, even if Congress were to pass it.
Yep.
So really important.
Thank you very much for listening there on Sirius in Fort Lauderdale. Let's check in with Anita in San Antonio, Texas, watching on Free Speech TV. Thank you, Anita, for spending time with us today.
Hey, Danielle. Hi,
hey.
Danielle. Hi, Shano.
Hey.
Yeah, I feel the same way about Hillary Clinton. The more they criticize her unfairly, the more I defend her. And I think it's the same with President Obama.
Yeah. I don't know why. I don't understand the psychology, I guess, of it, but I find myself doing so.
Well, yeah, because it's hypocritical, first of all, and a lot of it is misogynistic, and it's the same with the racial stuff with President Obama and the disrespect.
Yeah,
and when it's unfair,
for us to want to
Yeah, I'm sorry. That unfairness pitchfork goes off in the middle of my body. I'm just like, I cannot stand unfairness. And so many of the attacks on both of them are so fundamentally unfair and unwarranted. That's why I jump in. If there's some kind of criticism that's reasonable, I'll listen to it. I'm not going to, you know, jump to their defense necessarily. But the unfair ones just tick me off. So.
Yeah, it would be amazing if they actually criticized them for something that was that, you know, that was justified. Then we, you know, then they might actually get some of us on their side. But what they do is they pick these issues that are just blatant, you know, they're blatantly unfair.
Right. Well, not even so much unfair, but they're irrelevant. You know, let's talk about policy.
Yeah,
let's
exactly,
talk about, you know, you want to talk about, you know, connections to Wall Street. I'm all for it. But to make comments.
They can't talk about that.
Yeah, of course not. No, that might.
I wanted to respond to that caller who talked about voter ID.
Okay.
That always perplexes me because in Texas, we have a lot of undocumented workers. And the way I see it, if all these people are voting, they must be voting Republican.
Yeah.
and a lot of the states are red that a lot of undocumented workers, you know, live in.
Yeah.
So I don't even understand where, you know.
And
not only that, he referenced Hans von Spassky, I think.
Yeah.
I don't recall. I'm not familiar with the person that he referenced.
Yeah, he did. I think he's like a neo-Nazi or something.
I don't know. Maybe somebody listening knows who he was referring to. I am always, you know, astounded that people continue to.
He is not a Nazi. Hans A. von Spakovsky is actually an expert over at the Heritage Foundation on immigration and election.
His background is pretty shady.
All right. Well, we'll have to look into that one. I never understand why people continue to claim that there's such an issue with voter fraud. If there was, those people would be frog marched in front of the Fox cameras on a daily basis because they are itching for that information.
Yeah, and I want to be really clear on this guy because, you know, there's nothing like that in his background. There may be a person with a similar name. I mean, this guy, went to Vanderbilt University School of Law. He has his bachelor's degree from MIT. So he's, you know, it's okay. I just want to make sure that, you know, just for his sake and for everyone's sake that we get it straight. And I can imagine there might be a name out there that might be similar, and I don't want to confuse him.
Okay. I think we have John Nichols.
Cool.
I'm not sure. We only have a few minutes left, but let's jump to John. Anita, thank you very much for the call. John, is that?
You totally have John Nichols, and he's apologetic for being late to get with you.
I'm glad
to be on with you.
Perfectly okay. I know you had a busy day, so I'm just honored that you would join us.
I was giving a speech about Scott Walker.
Well, that almost intrigues me more than your article that I have in front of me about Hillary Clinton and the Fast Track and the TPP. I don't know which one to ask you about, John. Please, by all means.
Well, let's do Fast Track and TPP.
Okay.
Only because it's a really critical issue at this point. And, you know, to my mind, as I said in that article, and as I'm saying in a lot of places around the country, we're going to watch this fast-track debate. We're going to be very, very interested in where people in Congress line up, where Democrats line up. Obviously, there's an immense interest in the kind of push and pull right now between President Obama and Elizabeth Warren. But we also should be asking ourselves, where does Hillary Clinton stand on this? I mean, she wants to be the president of the United States. If she is president of the United States, she's going to have to deal with a lot of trade policy, including specifics like fast track issues. She also seems to want to be identified as a populist, as somebody who really does get some of these core economic issues and understands them better, frankly, not just than Republicans, but even than some Democrats. And so, to my mind, it's incumbent upon her to take a stand on fast track. She needs to say whether she's a yes or a no. Now, that's politically dangerous. That's politically challenging because if she's a yes, she offends a lot of people, not just labor, but a lot of progressives. If she's a no, she offends President Obama, who she worked very closely with. So I think it is a big issue, not one that makes or breaks her politically, but one that, frankly, we should all be willing to ask.
Yeah, and, you know, we also saw, well, John, this segment is over. Do you, by chance, have a few minutes to stick around for the next segment?
Of
course I do. I'm sorry to be late, Joyce.
Oh, no, by no means. No worries. I'm just...
We can't move it.
Yeah, I would love to pick your brain for just a few more seconds. Everybody listening, stick around for more John Nichols, Washington correspondent at The Nation. Don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We will be back with more John Nichols right after this break. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman program here on Free Speech TV. John, we just have this quick four-minute break here for our Free Speech TV and non-commercial audience. So, and then we'll jump right back to our commercial audience in just a few minutes. Is that okay with you?
As long as you can keep track, I'll do my best.
Okay. Well, while we're in the break, so we don't say anything on the Clinton and TPP issue, tell us about your speech on Scott Walker.
Well, we're very interested in Scott Walker today because of this rare development where one of the Koch brothers actually spoke. And when asked, he said, apparently, that if it was up to him, the next Republican nominee for president should be, to quote David Koch, should be Scott Walker. Now, that's a big deal. It's a very, very telling comment, but it needs to be analyzed because the fact of the matter is that while he said it should be Scott Walker, he did not say we're going to throw in, put money and energy behind Scott Walker. Why is that? Because at the end of the day, the Koch brothers see their spending on political campaigns not as some purely ideological endeavor, but a transactional endeavor. They want to spend their money and get something for it. And what they want is the White House. And so the notion that they will necessarily throw all their money into the primaries on behalf of Scott Walker, I think is an ill-thought one. The reality is that they are marshaling immense amounts of money to back whoever the Republican nominee for president is. Would they like it to be Scott Walker? I think there's no doubt. I think they really, really like him a lot. But are they going to spend money to help him push aside everybody else? Not necessarily, because if you know the Koch brothers, they think most of these Republicans are quite acceptable. It's because of their overwhelming influence on the party.
Right. I think that they are of the impression that they can shape, bend, and influence pretty much anybody on that side of the spectrum who gets the nomination.
You nailed it.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. They aren't, to them, Republican presidential candidates, with the possible exception, and I say this very, strongly, with the possible exception of Mike Huckabee, who has a quirkily populist sensibility and frankly isn't where they are on a lot of stuff. With the possible exception of Mike Huckabee, I think they would see almost all these candidates, even Rand Paul, as reasonably acceptable.
Yeah, well, Rand Paul, I think, probably aligns with them on more issues than several of the other candidates, at least on the libertarian spectrum.
Without a doubt, especially on issues of war and peace and also on issues of privacy. Remember, the Koch brothers actually are pretty strong opponents of the Patriot Act, or historically have had a lot of discomfort with that. So I think you're right, although I'd be careful because Rand Paul is, they like him in some ways, but remember, the Koch brothers are crony capitalists. I mean, they do have a lot of interest in how government treats corporations, how government treats wealthy donors.
Right.
And Rand Paul might not be the perfect president for that. We just don't know where Rand Paul's going to be.
Right.
It's
very interesting. We were talking today about insiders versus outsiders, and I think what you're talking about plays into that so much. But let's jump back into the commercial, to our whole audience, and get back into that Hillary discussion in just a few seconds. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman program. I'm Danielle here with Shano and joined by the one and only John Nichols, Washington correspondent at The Nation, associate editor of the Capital Times out of Madison. You can check it out at thenation.com and follow John on Twitter at Nichols uprising. John, you know, reading your article this morning, I think I read it earlier this week as well, but it made me wonder. In the last election, we pretty much almost across the board saw that people who ran away from the president, as far as Democrats, lost their elections, and people who stood with him and with progressive Democratic policies did well, and even down to the ballot initiatives. Do you think that that's a factor in whether or not Hillary supports the TPP? And I'm torn on this. You know, I don't want her to come out in favor for the TPP, but I worry that running against the president is a bad idea. I don't know how to balance that.
Well, you're really smart because you're analyzing the politics in a very savvy way. The fact of the matter is that with a number of constituencies within the Democratic Party, there is a great appreciation of Barack Obama. And, you know, by and large, you know, there's a lot of base voters, the kind of people who show up for caucuses and primaries, who like you to stand with the president. That may not be the whole of the party, but it's a portion there. Now, there also happens to be a huge portion of the party that, for a variety of reasons, is passionately opposed to our current approach to trade policy. And Fast Track has become the embodiment of that current approach to trade policy. So we've got a real division here, a real fight going on. It's serious stuff. And is in my sense, at least my impression of it all, is that when you have that kind of division, when you have that kind of complexity, what you have to do is the right thing, right? There comes a point where you can't, you know, kind of split the hairs and struggle with the politics. You have to kind of get to the heart of the matter and, you know, do what makes sense. And at this point, I can't make a case for Fast Track.
Yeah.
I just don't see it. And so even though it's hard, and even though there are risks involved, I think for Clinton, it would be very, very beneficial. At some point, she's going to have to make her distance from President Obama. You can't just run and say, I'm going to be pure continuity with the president. And I think this is a very, very good issue on which to say, you know, agree with the guy on a lot of stuff, appreciate, you know, all he's done, but I just don't, I'm just not there on this. I would personally very much like to hear those words because, remember, Barack Obama, strong, weak, love him, hate him, whatever you think about the guy, he's never running for president again.
Right.
Hillary Clinton's running for president, and she needs to define herself. And here's the bottom line on all this. People have become very, very sophisticated with regard to trade policy. They hear what politicians are saying, and they're very skeptical. The reason they're skeptical is now for more than 20 years, politicians have promised them that trade policy was going to make them rich, was going to, you know, bring jobs, was going to do all this great stuff. And all they see are shuttered auto plants, you know, declining industries, hard hit towns. And that doesn't make sense to them. So the issues, a question like Fast Track, in and of itself becomes more definitional, becomes more real because people say, I need to hear yeses and noes. I don't need to hear, you know, your philosophy or your, you know, what your values are. I need to know whether, you know, when an issue arises, where are you going to be?
Right. I know she has come out and said, I'm opposed to trade for trade's sake, but that's, I mean, that's a pretty vague statement.
Everybody's
whichever side you'd like to see her come out on. Yeah, it's.
Yeah, just about. No, and anyway, I just think people are very, I think people need to hear more. And it will not destroy her politically. That's not my point. But I understand the inclination to keep it vague. I am simply saying that on balance, I think the smarter approach is to take a stand on this because I actually believe, and I believe this very strongly, that Fast Track is wrong.
Yeah.
It's wrong if a Republican does it. It's wrong if a Democrat does it because it takes away our ability through our elected representatives to check and balance a huge portion of economic policy. And I just don't think we should give that up.
Yeah, I have to agree with you wholeheartedly. And I think that there are a lot of progressives out there willing to be convinced that we want a winning candidate, even if it's Hillary. But you know, it's going to take issues like this and strong stances on her part to convince us.
Well, and a final element is, you know, Hillary Clinton now is in this dominant position. She is effectively seen by an awful lot of the media as the presumptive Democratic nominee. She is taking a lot of hits. New York Times and other publications are writing some really rough things about the Clinton Foundation and other issues, and she'll continue to take those hits. There comes a point at which she has to communicate with the base that she believes in some things and that, you know, she's willing to take some tough stands. That's the way, that's actually the way to, in a way, I don't mean it's not a precise thing, but it is a way to respond to a lot of the criticism.
It is.
To clarify yourself. And I think this is a place where, to my mind, Clinton would benefit greatly by doing a bold and somewhat courageous statement saying that she is opposed to fast track.
Brilliant analysis, opinion, and facts, all of the above. John, thank you so much. I know you had a very busy day. It means the world that you were able to join us today.
You know, I can't imagine a show I'd rather be on right now. This is, you guys do great, and I really appreciate what Tom's show does for our discourse.
Yeah, me too. It's an honor to work here. It's an honor to get to speak to people like you, both on air and off air. Thank you so much. John Nichols, Washington correspondent of The Nation. Big thanks to Tom and Louise for allowing us to guest host, for Sean, for Jim, for Troy, helping make this possible. For Hal Sparks, for joining us for the Mega Worldwide Hour, and to you guys for listening. Thanks so much, and Tom will be back on Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard, count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com, everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.